Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is The Big Breakdown. A long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
For 20 years, Blanca Simpson wasn't just the Murdaugh family's housekeeper. She was Maggie Murdaugh's confidant, her right hand, the person Maggie pulled into a room and shut the door to cry with when Alec's financial world was collapsing around them. Now the conviction that was supposed to be the last word for Maggie and Paul has been erased, not because of what the jury heard, but because of what a court clerk whispered to them while they were hearing it. Joining me to discuss how she feels about all this, what it means going forward, is Blanca Simpson, Maggie's housekeeper, Alec Murdaugh's former housekeeper, Paul Murdaugh's former housekeeper, the woman who was there in the home and knew them better than most. She joins us once again to discuss this case. The other day, obviously, the big news comes down. The Supreme Court overturns the verdict. All five justices, unanimous. I mean, we know this had been simmering for a bit. We thought, you know, this very likely could happen. But when it actually did happen, when the news came out, how did it hit you? What was your reaction initially?
You know, I thought I had prepared myself for it. And I thought I would be okay with whatever verdict they came up with, whatever their decision that they made. Mm-hmm. But in actuality, once the verdict came out, it felt like a punch in the gut, to tell you the truth. It really took me for a, you know, I knew it was coming and I could understand, you know, and I respect the court's decision, but still, you know, it still hits hard. It really does. 'Cause here we go again.
And, yeah,
you know, people starting to get back to normal and now here we go again.
I mean, a lot of things I'm sure run through your mind. What did you do? What was your reaction to that? I mean, did you, sometimes, you know, like you get weird news sometimes and it's like, I just want to go to bed. I want to go put the sheets over my head and be like, okay, I need a couple minutes to process this, or days or whatever. What did you do when with that information, when you got it, how did you start to try to work through it?
I told my husband I was going to the store to get something for dinner.
Yeah.
And, I went to the cemetery. I felt that I had to go to the cemetery, and I can't explain it. I don't know. It's almost like I could hear her say, girl, you know, you got to come and see me, you know, that sort of thing. It was just a feeling that I had. I had that urge to go to the cemetery. And I mean, I know they can't hear me. I know they can't, you know, I can't see them, but it was just something that I felt I had to do, was let them know, hey, here we go again.
Did you know you were going to the cemetery when you got in that car, or when you turned the ignition and you started going? Was it initially to the store and then you just like, no, we're going to the cemetery?
That was an excuse that I used. I mean, I still had to go to the store, but my intention, as soon as I heard the news, it was, I don't know, it was just an overwhelming feeling that I had to go there.
When you got to the cemetery, walk us through what happened there? What was it like for you?
I know people are going to say, well, she was probably doing, it wasn't anything that you do for show. I recorded it because I wanted, people to understand that it is a, you know, it's a bad experience when you go through something like this. You think everything's been resolved. He's in prison. And then all of a sudden you hear the news that he was basically, it's a technicality, you know? Mm-hmm. And my voice was really shaky because, like I said, I thought I was prepared, but I really was not prepared for those, you know, the news.
I Fran, your co-author on the book, had told me that you had gone out there and that you made a short video. I have not watched it. Did you say anything to Maggie and Paul when you were at the grave that day?
I think it was something to the effect of, you know, something about people can go on with their life, but here we go again, or you know, but the only two that can't speak are right here. They can't speak for themselves are right here. And something to that effect.
Yeah.
And then I said, all because of a technicality. And it's hurtful. It's really, really hurtful. You know, people have gone on. Maybe people mourn other people different. Maybe I don't know if it's a culture thing. But I was very loyal to her. And, you know, it hurts. It really hurts that because somebody wanted a shot at stardom, you know, that here we go again, you know, all over again.
I mean, you got to have a lot of emotions and feelings about that because, I mean, it is a technicality. And you know, people will go into the trial and go, well, the financial this and that. I mean, we can talk about that too. But had this not happened, the odds of us getting here, and when I say this, I mean Becky Hill and her tampering with the jurors, had that not happened, the odds would have been significantly lower of this getting a shot at a retrial. Of course, Alec would have tried no matter what. But this is seems to be what the big tipping point was with the financial crimes sprinkled on top as here's a little even more reason why. When you think about this and you think about Becky Hill and the way that she had handled all of this, I had just watched one of the Murdaugh docs again the other day, and she was in part two of it talking about her duties and, you know, very, very proud of how she handled it. This was before all the charges came down. But when you see how Becky carried herself, a lot of pride in her position, but you know now behind the scenes what was going on. I mean, what are you saying to Becky Hill in your mind in those moments?
I really can't say that. But I think.
If we had to use a bleep button. I mean, how would you describe it appropriate? I mean, if you could, like what's going through your mind when you think of that? I mean, there's got to be moments of anger there, or what?
You know, my main focus is with folks that get into positions, especially in the area that we're from. It's small communities all together.
Yeah,
and some people get in positions of power. And instead of using them for good, you know, it's more about them than about why you got that position, you know. And that's my issue is when you get in a position or when you promise you're going to do something, you know, for the people, do it for the people, not because of you trying to get something out of it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You have to have some kind of values and morals with that. And it really does upset me that, you know, some people get certain positions and abuse those positions because of the status that they carry. I don't know if I make sense, you know, and I mean, lately you see a lot of that in the news. It's like you get elected to a position, you get selected for a position, you go and you work in a certain position. And it kind of makes you feel like you're above the law or you're above everybody and you can do as you please. Well, perhaps, but she should have measured the enormous amount of publicity that this case was getting and that there was the possibility of no chance. She should have never thought that she was above, you know, the law or above anything else. She should have done her job the way she should have done, you know, she should have performed her job. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, the glamour, the celebrity, the Hollywood lights, you know, New York, whatever, you know, everything was focused around her. And the documentary that you're talking about, I was shocked when I saw her basically almost narrating. And it did that stung when I saw her doing that, because I was not aware that she was going to be a part of it. Yeah. And most certainly not, you know, narrating or, you know, basically that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
And I tell people all the time, you know, you can, you know, people, I've had some people that have said, you know, well, she's lying and I'm going to make her tell the truth and some stuff like that. But it's like, okay, you know, I told my truth. I said the truth. It does. Some people are going to believe it. Some people are not going to believe it. But what I want to know is, why are you so determined to prove me wrong or to say that I'm saying something that is incorrect? What bed were you hiding under, or what closet were you in for the last 15 years that you know more about the inside works of that family than me? I just want to know which bedroom, under what bed, and in what closet were you hiding that you can tell me more about this family just by what you've seen and observed. I mean, you can have brothers and sisters that you grew up with, but once you get married and you have your lives apart, you don't tell everybody what goes on within your house. It's kind of like the family kind of separate. You do things together or whatever, but they don't know your odds and ends in the house. Mm-hmm. And people, for some reason, some people don't understand that. You know, when you're around people on the weekends, you have your guard up at times. I know she did. She used to tell me that all the time. She couldn't be herself. So, yeah, it is. It's been upsetting, but I think this time around, I'm better prepared because of basically talking to you guys. You know, the way you guys ask me questions and all that. I think I'm more prepared this time than I was the last time. The last time, I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
At least I know what to expect now.
Do you think, and this is obviously just pure conjecture and just opinion, do you think Becky Hill, that attitude, that way of thinking, that was she systemic of a bigger problem in that courthouse? Was there a lot of people in that courthouse, in your opinion, that kind of had their own agenda, not necessarily for fame or fortune or selling a book, but here's how we're going to do things. Yeah, there's rules, but here's how we do things here. And just, I'm really wondering how much Becky realized that she was putting her weight on the scale of justice here, or putting her thumbprint on it, or if she just thought she was being folksy. You know, and just, well, you better look out for what he's saying. Just this people that make comments, which is fine at the coffee shop, not when you're overseeing the jury. But sometimes people get into those positions of power and then those lines really blur, and they still try to be the folksy coffee shop version of themselves in places where there's reasons you can't do that. It's a legal setup. When you run that through your mind, in your opinion, where do you think Becky was on that? Do you think obviously she didn't want her to go this far and have her life destroyed the way she's destroyed it. But I do wonder, was she in her mind just being herself? And I'm wondering what she's telling herself today as she sits on her swing in her front yard as people take pictures of her. I just saw some of those. How far do you think this was going to go in the mind of Becky Hill when she was talking to that jury originally?
I believe she was in the mentality that it was okay, you know, because that's how she is. That's her personality.
Yeah.
I don't think she measured the effect that it was going to have on the case. Mm-hmm. And I just don't believe that she actually, you know, thought it through. And those are positions I had when I was in the military, I had a top secret clearance for one of the positions that I held. And you just have to learn that certain things you do not discuss. If you don't, if you want to be a friend of mine or you want to be friendly with me, that's fine. But don't, we don't discuss my job, especially in the position that I was in.
Yeah.
And that's basically how I view it. And that's one of the reasons I'm really passionate about people who get into certain positions. Do your job. Do it for the people that you work for. Don't do it for your glory or your, you know, for any kind of gain. You're there to serve a purpose. And in her situation, I think it went above that.
Yeah.
It went way above her head. And, you know, unfortunately, here we are again.
Yeah.
I mean, she was really good. She was very friendly to everybody. And,
yeah,
and
I mean,
people are now kicking themselves in the bumper.
Yeah, I get how, I mean, she comes across, if you didn't know her and she didn't, you'd be like, oh, she's, you know, this, you know, kind of bubbly lady, you know, and if she just stuck to doing her job, everything would have been fine. But obviously, that's not what happened. Obviously, here we're looking at another trial that's going to be coming up. You're likely going to be called as a witness here. When you look at yourself today, and then you look back 3 years ago as to who you were on that witness stand, how have you changed? Are you the same witness you were 3 years ago? Will you be the same person going into court again when this next trial comes up, if you're called?
My story's not going to change.
No,
I said
no.
What I said, and I meant what I said.
No.
You know, regardless, I think I've grown a lot in the aspect that I'm very nitpicky, or, you know, I kind of pick and choose. I can see people sometimes that are, don't mean me any good, you know, that, and I've made some really good, I've also met some really good people that have helped me along the way to, that are in the business that have guided me along to help me so that I don't stumble. And I'm very appreciative of that. Because I never asked to be put in this position.
No.
I was not expecting I was not expecting all of this from simply testifying. I had no idea what I was going to be asked. They had questioned I had no idea. And they told me 15 minutes on the stand. That was the most I was going to be on there. And then you're on your way. You know, you can go live your life. You know how they put it.
Mm-hmm.
And when it started going on and on and on, and then the jury going in and out, and, you know, people throwing papers across the floor and all that, I didn't know what to expect.
Sure.
You know, other than I came home and I'm telling you, I went to Walmart thinking me that I can pick up the groceries real quick and then head on home. Everybody's probably at work, so they're not watching me. I forgot that people watch the thing on their phone.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But it's been a roller coaster of emotions. But I think this time around, my story is not going to change.
Sure.
I know what I said, and I know what I saw within that house. I saw them. I saw them for who they were and how they interacted, the type of family that they were.
There's more to come with Blanca Simpson. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're watching or listening so you don't miss any of it. Coming up next, what the jury never heard and what they need to hear in the Alec Murdaugh trial round two. That's coming up with Blanca Simpson next. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss that piece of the conversation. Links are in the description for you to weigh in with your thoughts as well. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Okay, we're going to play pretend for a moment now with Alec Murdaugh. All right. Let's say the quiet part out loud. We all know this. Alec Murdaugh's murder conviction is gone, overturned by the state Supreme Court, and not because anyone called him innocent. He's an admitted thief with decades of federal time left, and that stands. It fell because a court clerk leaked in or leaned into the jury, and because the judge let his financial mess swallow the actual murder question. So strip all that away, and let's look at what's left here. We got two people shot at the kennels. Two different guns, neither ever having the guns found. No blood on the man the state pointed at for 6 weeks. So today, a thought experiment. If it's not Alec, who is it? Got Jennifer Coffendaffer with us and Robin Dreek, both retired FBI special agents. Let's take Murdaugh's name out of this. And I know, and we all probably agree Alec did this. But if he didn't, and they're going to dig in deeper, if we were to look at this from another perspective, because there are interesting lanes here that I still wonder about to this day of could there have been other people involved? Let's start out cold here. Forget the name Murdaugh. It's not on the board. Two bodies are set at the dog kennels deep on a rural hunting property with fresh eyes and no suspect in your head. Where does that scene point you first, Jen, if you're pulling up as a member of law enforcement and Alec is right there, standing there, hey, hi, how are you? In his white shirt, what do you do? What are you looking for?
Oh, I have to answer. Can I defer this to a defense attorney? You know what? I mean, there's just nothing that makes sense. In other words, okay, some of the theories out right there, right?
Yeah.
It's opioid supplier.
Okay.
So opioid supplier is going to come into the deep part of his property at the dog kennel and just decide to blow the head off of his son. You can bleep that out. That's what happened. And then with his wife crawling around on the ground, hunt her with a different gun. And then, oh, by the way, use the ammunition that is theirs. And oh, by the way, the Murdaugh guns are missing. No, if you're a person outside, you're going to bring your own weaponry to commit the crime. And how is that going to help you taking out, you know, the family for a drug debt? So that's just ridiculous. Okay, now the other one is revenge. Is it revenge because Mallory died in this horrible boating accident that Papa did? If that's it, and you're the family or a loved one or just a wackadoodle that's pissed off about Mallory Beach being dead, then you're going to do that on Paul. You're going to figure out a time where Paul, who's absolutely out of control, it's easy to find him by himself drinking somewhere. That's where you're going to take him out. You're not going to go on his property down to the kennel and then also kill the mom. So I just am at a loss of it. And then, okay, Buster, right? Some people still say Buster.
I haven't heard that one.
I have, but it's ridiculous because he has a rock solid alibi about 3.5 hours away with his girlfriend. That's not going to play either.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make any sense that it's anyone other than somebody in that proximity, and the whatever puts him there, the Snapchat.
Yeah, yeah, and I agree too. Alex is the one that really fits everything on this one. But to your conjecture and to your thought experiment, Tony, so remove him from this as a suspect, even though you need this other element that I'd be looking at too. It's like, all right, because all these other things don't really flesh out, but there's a potential lot of 1 degrees of separation from potential impact of the financial crimes he inflicted on others. So I'd probably be looking at revenge motives from people associated with those that were impacted majorly financially that would want retribution in some way. And the next thing you start looking at leakage along the way, stalking behaviors, you know, I'd be looking for arcs of escalation that would go in this area from people that might've been impacted by his financial crimes that he inflicted on others if I wasn't looking at him first.
Robin wins the game show again.
And congratulations. You get to go home with some delicious rice-a-roni, the San Francisco treat.
Yes.
A year's supply of it, Jen, just for you. Rice-a-roni. You pull Alex out, and you got to put somebody in. If we're playing that thought experiment, someone with a reason to drive onto that land and kill a wife and her son. Paul was facing charges over the boat crash that killed the Mallory Beach and the lawsuits and the grudges they were piling up. If there was an outsider outside of any of this, if we had to look outside of the boat crash, if we had to look outside of his financial crimes, the only area that makes no sense to me is the sheer dollar amount of money that Alec Murdaugh was spending on his opioid addiction.
I looked it up too.
Okay.
Go ahead. Let
me finish this thought, then you can debunk it. Is the sheer amount. I mean, from everything I've understood, is like this could kill a zoo. Like, this is not one man's opioid addiction unless he's like hoarding opioids somewhere for fun. And it's just another addiction of his is collecting drugs. I don't know. But other than that, what are you doing with all these things? Are you getting that dramatically ripped off on the drugs you're buying? Or is there something else going on here that none of us are quite aware of or quite understand that go beyond Alec Murdaugh just sourcing opioids for himself? Is there a greater crime or another crime that's taking place here in Murdaughville that nobody is, I guess, truly aware of yet, or that hasn't been brought to the forefront that would somehow intersect with this murder that would give us more sensibility or more sense as to why this would have taken place? Robin, how am I wrong?
Well, I didn't say you're wrong. So when we did this thought experiment a couple of weeks ago, I actually did a deeper dive on opioids in that area, drug traffic in that area, airport trafficking in that area, and actually looking at what can someone function on that amount every day. So here's what I found out. He testified under oath that he was taking up to 60 oxycodone, 30 milligram pills a day. That equals roughly 420 pills per week or 1,800 milligrams of oxycodone daily. Street value for that pill typically is $20 to $40 for each pill, and an average of $30 per pill, 420, comes out to $12,600 per week. The $50,000 per week figure, is buying significantly more than that. But it is physically possible for him to actually still function on that many pills a day, because what happens is you get a tolerance for that level, and it doesn't start. It has a massive effect on your body, but it doesn't affect your day-to-day operation. He just became extremely tolerant of it. And I think the number that they came up with on this when I did the research, it didn't come out to 50,000. It came out to roughly like 36,000 to 44,000. And then with, just inflating things.
So when you do conjecture, it's like you see a 44 number. It's like it's almost 50,000 worth.
Yeah.
I can see how it gets conflated over time.
It is very plausible that is actually accurate. Even though it didn't sound accurate to me when I first heard it, yeah. I deep dove on it.
But did anybody test Alec Murdaugh to see if he was actually taking that many drugs?
That's a good question.
I mean, I think there would be a toxicology that would show that of some way, shape, or form to actually show, yes, in fact, he is taking that many drugs, or is that just his fucking story that he's telling people?
Or detox looks like snot coming out of your nose in trial.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just wondering if that is part of the story. I mean, Jen, do you think there's more to the drug story here, or is that just another piece of noise or another conspiracy theory? I hesitate to even call it conspiracy theory because it feels like something different than this. Anyway, what's your thoughts? Do you think there's more to the drug story on Alec?
It's this shameful and pathetically predictable excuse for why he committed the crimes he committed.
Yes.
Why didn't it be better? So he has to have this inflated amount that is not proven in anything that is factually concrete. That's just his numbers he threw out. So while they might be achievable, it was, like I said, pathetically predictable that he would try to say something like that.
And also, and to that, 100% agree. The fact, because part of us looking at it was he then reselling it? Was this drug dealers are coming to get their money? No, actually. So even if his numbers were accurate, they were consumable entirely by him, and he wasn't necessarily dealing, as we were going down that conjecture road, as possible theories as well. So, yeah, Jen, I completely agree.
Give me an idea here, guys, from a investigative standpoint, with this thing going back to trial. Obviously, the attorneys of Murdaugh, Harpootalan, and Griffin have said they are going to be investigating it further, probably with their own PIs and such. But does this bring SLED back into the picture at all, or the FBI, or anybody to further investigate the case any deeper to counter anything that may be coming at the direction of the prosecution here? Does this further the murder investigation from SLED's perspective?
Absolutely, it will. And I would look for Griffin and Harpootalan. I say that right? Actually come up with a third party type theory. I don't know if the court will allow it, because if you don't have evidence of it, you can't allow it. But that's what I'm looking for. They're going to come up with something, and then SLED will get involved to investigate to see if there's any truth.
And talking about SLED, what do you think about SLED's conduct during this entire thing? Because I looked this up last time we were talking about this too, Jen. They have a huge amount of resources, and they had a lot of reps. In other words, the amount of investigations they conduct per year in South Carolina is pretty substantial. And it's broken down, I think it's four districts they have, but each one of them had a lot of experience apparently doing this. Do you think they're on or off with how they conducted the investigation? How do you think it's going to impact the second investigation? Well, the second trial.
You know, overall, I think they did a pretty decent job. I really do. But there's always going to be mistakes made, because everyone on SLED, just like everybody in the FBI, nobody is perfect. But are there any large enough holes or mistakes they made to affect? I don't know. I mean, if they're smart, the defense attorneys, they will try to go after the investigation harder than they did before. I would be looking under every stone as to what they did wrong and try to run it like Alan Jackson would run it. Mm-hmm.
It makes you wonder if they're going to go for a third party. Are they going to name a name? Are they going to try and go down there? Is it going to be a mystery and just kind of out there in the ether? Do you think they have? I mean, the one that comes to my mind that has been kind of used as the scapegoat 50 different times, and in no way am I saying he had anything to do with this, is the Cousinetti character. But I am wondering if we're going to see somebody thrown under the bus here in an effort to protect or preserve Alec Murtaugh's flimsy reputation or whatever may be left of it.
A lot of it will depend on how much money Alec still has squirreled away to pay these guys and how they want to win. What they should be doing is they should be setting up mock trials and hiring individuals to be these juries and run by two or three different scenarios and see how that works in terms of what wins. Does it win just to basically indict and just make the investigation look horrible? Is it better to blame Eddie? Is it better to play they should set up those. That's what I would do if I had all the money, and set them up and see which one wins.
Yeah, good point.
If you were anybody in the world of Alec Murdaugh right now, and if you were Cousin Eddie, or you were anybody that may have more information about Alec Murdaugh that you have not shared at this moment in time, would now be the opportune time to do so?
It's the opportune time, but you know, I tell you, as an investigator for me, and I know we've talked a little bit about this, Robin and I have, but look, when people come in this late, after years and everything, you just have to, it's difficult to fully consider. I'm not saying that stuff like that won't happen and it won't be used, but hopefully the jury has on their wait a minute goggles, because a lot of times it's not valid information.
Yeah, a lot of times, man, we dealt with this a lot. When I worked in the RA here, the resident agency, you know, my main focus is always counterintelligence stuff. But inevitably, when you're working smaller offices, you do a lot of bleed over. I would have some public corruption stuff. And man, people love going at each other in the areas of election fraud and public corruption, stuff like that. My first response always is, hey, man, that sounds really great. Show me. Show me the email, show me the text, show me something, because your recollection and your memory is a fantastic thing, but I can't bring that anywhere. Show me. So at this point, if someone has something else, show me.
Be interesting to see if anything is shown from anybody in the world of the Murdaughs. Fascinating new directions here with all of these cases. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. Be sure to check out Jen's podcast, Break the Case, with Jennifer Coffendaffer, wherever you get podcasts, and also on YouTube. Just search it there, press subscribe, and of course, Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me, available wherever you get books, and also available on audiobook right now. Go and check it out. Until next time, for Jen, for Robin, and for Todd, I am Tony. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever?
Cabin crew.
Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boost and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.